All right, we are here on Gone Rogue Podcast. I'm hanging out with Tawny. We are talking about dry humping and her book, Dry Humping. I thought that was the most excellent name for a book I think I've ever seen. As soon as I saw it on Instagram, which is where I first came across you, I was like, oh God, I immediately love this person. I'm super excited to talk to you. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So I want to start because I just recently went speed dating and I was trying to wrangle a ton of girls to come and do speed dating with me. And this like sentence kept coming up. They were like, oh, I would need to have a few drinks beforehand. Like, oh, There's no way I could do that. I would have to go out drinking. Like I'd have to be a little bit drunk. And I, you know, as hard as it is, you're just like, all right, like that's just where people are at. And it's such a confidence thing. And it's such an socially acceptable thing as well. And when you start like getting frustrated about how unavoidable the conversation around like drinking as this crutch, you notice it everywhere. Do you see that all the time now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am married now, so I don't personally see it, but I, you know, a lot of my friends are single. They'll send me screenshots of them like having conversations about sober dating on the apps. And I hear these horror stories of like people getting dumped because they don't drink and not being able to try something new in bed because they're sober. And just like, you know, as you know, you've read the book. It really, I am so obsessed with the concept of liquid courage. And I see it, I notice it everywhere in pop culture and film and television, see it on dates. Like I am a cultural anthropologist, I guess, and I'm just always observing.
It's so hard not to see it. And it's like, you know, it's movies and social media and everything in the stories that we share and even just humor. Like I think alcohol is a really big piece of humor and people, you know, a lot of people in my circles that I've known since university or college, we got to hang out because we would drink together. And so we would talk about stories about drinking and we would talk about, and it's like, that's never evolved. For some people, it's just like that's the lifestyle and that's the conversation and we joke about what's happening on the weekend or the hangover or the shitty food that you ate on the Sunday after a night out. It's like, to me, you know, in my journey, one, I started doing CrossFit and I started to get into fitness. So losing time and quite literally like a Monday or, you know, a Friday, if it was people going out on a Thursday, it was like losing the chance to go and train. I was like, I'm wasting so much time with these like extracurricular activities, being social with my friends in this manner. And it just started to not make a lot of sense to me. And, you know, I that was me because I'd had different priorities at the time, but I'm almost surprised to see some people, you know, I'm in my mid 30s now, my partner's in his late 30s. And I'm like, these people that have been doing this since their late teens, in Australia, the drinking age is 18, a little bit different to the US. So it's like, you know, if you started drinking prior to turning 18, which a lot of people do, it's like they've been drinking since they were like 16 or 17 and they're still drinking into their mid 30s. And I'm like, what, tell me about your priorities. Like, is that, and I know this is something that it was really cool hearing your story about how you and your husband met and like your journey dating together. It seemed like both of you were already on the path to becoming sober and dating and meeting people and making connections sober. Was it because you had also changed your priorities? Like, is this a priorities thing?
Yeah, I really like how you're framing it as priorities, because that's 100% what it is. And I think that that's why my husband and I, you know, one of the many reasons why we work is because we prioritized getting better, you know, above all else. Like we each had about 3 years of our own individual recovery before we met. So, you know, when I say recovery, I'm not just talking about not drinking. I'm talking about, you know, therapy, figuring out why we drink, finding healthy, creative outlets, finding ways to fill up our time that used to be spent at the bar. So, you know, there is a lot more to being sober than just not drinking. Not drinking is actually a pretty small part of the equation. Again, I like how you use the word priorities, because once you, you know, I could speak to myself and my husband, like once we decided to stop drinking, we made our mental and physical health a priority, you know? And the, you know, one of the reasons I love the intersection of your work is because it covers, you know, sex, sexuality, relationships, but also the fitness, the health aspect, because that is a huge part of my story as well.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think people consider alcohol and drinking as like a, well, I do it or I don't get to do it. And it's like, no, you do that or you get all of this. And, you know, for some people, it's not a 100% totally no drinking. And I'm not 100% I'm not fully sober. I have, you know, very rare nights out where I'll have the occasional drink, but it's become, drinking is like having vinegar to me. It doesn't sit in my stomach well. I've just become totally like, I think my body is, you know, people say that your cells can become tolerant to alcohol and they actually learn how to like be good at consuming alcohol. I think I've done the opposite. And now my body just rejects it. I'm like, I can like, get half a glass of wine. Yeah. And I'm like, it's in my stomach. I'm like, this is not good. I can't do it. So I'm not fully sober, but I, you know, it's such a rare thing that I do. For me, it's like, it's just, you're actually choosing, like, what do you want to get out of your time and what's the consequences of your actions? And I think when you're younger, you know, you probably can be forgiving for maybe not having some of that long-term thought or like being engaged in delayed gratification. I think when you're older, being like into the, I just want immediate relief. I just want to feel good. I just want to avoid the challenge of dating or fucking without alcohol. And it's like, hang on, but the delayed gratification you get from doing the work and exposing yourself to the full experience of this, it's so rewarding.
That's exactly it. And it, you know, a lot of people, like one of the biggest questions I get in my line of work, you know, as the quote sober sexpert is like, how can I replicate liquid courage, you know, without alcohol? And no one likes that. My answer is you have to just do the work. You have to figure out, why are you relying on liquid courage? In which situations do you feel like you need a drink? I am not anti-alcohol at all. Like I am not a prohibitionist. Alcohol does not work for me. I am not the best version of myself when I'm drinking. I'm definitely anti-big alcohol and the societal pressures to drink, but alcohol itself, you know, it's so personal. I went on a tangent and I forgot, where was I going?
We were talking about it's in my brain. So we were talking about the trade-offs and the delayed gratification that you get out of doing the easy thing.
The delayed gratification. So it's like, you know, we take these, like, let's just stick with the liquid courage for a minute. It's like, you know, you take a shot of tequila to feel more confident for whatever reason. It works fast. You know, it works very, very fast. And that is not, that's the instant gratification that people want to replicate in sobriety or sober curiosity, which is like why I encourage people to engage in hobbies, get creative, meet new people, go to the gym, go to yoga, go take a pottery class, like go learn something new about yourself or about the world. Like it don't like get out of your head, you know, like the reason you're relying on liquid courage is because you're so stuck in your head. And you think that you need it to do this thing, whether it's try something new in the bedroom or ask someone out on a date or even like, you know, being with family during the holidays. Like people feel like they need alcohol to get through these things. So my answer is no, there's no one-to-one replacement for a tequila shot. But the replacement is doing the work and figuring out why you think you need that shot in the first place.
I mean, honestly, I think the replacement is you fucking get to build a little self-confidence, because if you're constantly leaning on this liquid courage, which it's not, mm-hmm. it's just fucking a fallacy. It's like, it might as well be the, placebo effect, right? Like, yes, alcohol has a strong effect on the brain, but I'm like, it's the narrative that we have and the meaning that we give it. It's like, so many of us, unless you are, you know, to the point maybe where you are considered an addict or alcoholic, or you have a relationship that's really unhealthy. It's like most of us should be able to stop drinking, but it's this emotional attachment that we have with it.
Yes.
And it's like, you give up an opportunity to build confidence. And like, let me, so I had I really enjoy like challenging myself, and how I build confidence. It's something that I have figured out over the past few years. It's been in my nature to do hard things, but I didn't really know why. And I read a really good book. It's called Do Hard Things by Steve Magnus. And it was, you know, I read a lot of sports psychology books, and this book managed to put about 7 books that I'd read into like one, which I really liked. So it wasn't anything new, but it was just, you know, like when people are really good at being concise with delivering ideas. So he was talking about confidence, and confidence being something that is, you know, it's earned, not given, that kind of a phrase where it's like, hey, like you get confidence from doing hard things. And my example of this is I was traveling in Europe in July, and I really wanted to go to a sex club on my own. I was like, I feel like that would be hard to do and kind of scary and also really fun. And I just want to see if I can do it. And so I went. It was in Prague. Everybody else spoke English as a second language, if they spoke it at all. There was a mixture of people that were from Russia and Prague and France and other parts of Europe. So there was a totally different mixture of cultures. And then I also looked very different to a lot of European women. A lot of European women are very slim and small and tiny. And I'm like this muscular, cross-fitting Australian, like didn't fit in at all. And I wasn't drinking. They gave you a free drink. It was like a glass of Prosecco or something. So I had that. And then I switched to sparkling water, which is what I live on whenever I go out. And I had to sit at the bar for a really long time, not talking to anyone. And then I kind of managed to squeeze into a conversation with a couple sitting next to me. That was like, they were pretty good at speaking English, but it was still clunky. And it was very surface level conversation. And then I squeezed into another conversation about, you know, an hour and a half later. And then I was on the cusp of leaving. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I'd spent a lot of time sitting and like kind of being on my own and twiddling my thumbs and then walking around and then sitting again. And then I was like, and then I ended up bumping into someone else who spoke great English, and like we got to hang out for the night. So it turned into like this, it kind of hit that rock bottom of like, I think I'm just going to leave. And then I met a group of people and we ended up having a really good night. And you know, that experience, about 3 or 4 weeks later was in a similar scenario where it wasn't a similar scenario. It was just that I was at dinner or at a bar with my partner, and he was like, hey, I'm just going to go for like 5-10 minutes to catch up with a friend and I'll be back. Are you good? And I was like, man, I've sat at a bar in Prague at a sex party on my own for multiple hours. This is fine.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's like you have these experiences where you do harder and harder and harder things, and the stuff that you used to think was hard is easy. It's like,
yeah,
that's really the secret to confidence. It's like, how much can you challenge yourself? Because it actually just makes everything else relatively easy.
I mean, I love that story so much, and I'm glad you found a friend for the night. And
me too.
You know, it's I really compare, you know, confidence building to like what you just said, but it's almost like weightlifting. You know, there's this, you know, like you go to the gym and you start with, you know, 5-10 pound weights, and then you see that you get stronger. And it's not that things get easier. It's just that your muscle is literally stronger. Your body is stronger. You're able to do this thing that you're able to lift this weight that you couldn't lift 2 months ago. Like, that's fucking cool. I fucking love weightlifting for that reason. I feel like weightlifting is like a fuck you to the patriarchy in that way of like, women can have muscles, fuck off. But like that makes me feel more confident knowing that I can lift heavier things. But I think it translates to what you were just talking about. It's like, you don't start deadlifting, you know, 300 pounds. You work your way up. And I think building confidence is very similar, where you do these little things. You know, maybe you go sit at a coffee shop alone, go to a sex party alone, for me, in my early sobriety, I took a lot of classes. I studied Spanish. You know, I put myself out there because I wanted to learn more about myself, and putting myself out there through learning also makes me feel more confident because I'm learning more things. I genuinely feel more confident in the world because I learn new things. So finding the things that make you feel confident and just doing them, little by little, it can really, really, you know, build. And then again, these are muscles that you can flex when you need them.
Yeah. And I'd almost argue that that's really what we're saying when you say something like date yourself. I think maybe the idea of date yourself comes with like preconceived notions of like, oh, self-love and self-care. And I go get my hair done and I go out to dinner. And it's like, those are also awesome. But what you're trying to do is build internal strength and build confidence. And actually, I really like, I don't know how much you follow along with Matthew Hussey's stuff. He talks a lot about dating and like, you know, finding people and being confident. And a lot of his stuff is about like, you know, be confident and like take the lead and be clear and communicate well with people. And he has a really nice concept around dating and, you know, people being like, I'm looking to meet someone. And he's like, don't date for that. Date because you're living a life full of many activities. And one of those activities is making interesting connections and then pursuing the ones that you like. And then some of your, you know, some of the parts of the life that you want to live is learning a different language and being able to travel. And it's like, this should be another aspect of the life that you want to live, not because I want to check this box. And I just feel like that the dating yourself thing is kind of, if you can give a definition to it, it's like, it's the confidence, it's the live an amazing life, and the people that you need and the people that you want to be around will come through that rather than
100%
trying to fill a husband shaped void or fill a social life void with, you know, whatever you assume socializing should look like and getting there through alcohol.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you touched on that because like that's something that the term date yourself does have this, listeners, just so you know, that's the chapter one of my book is called Dating Yourself. And it's just this idea of getting to know who you are outside of your relationship with alcohol and not just bubble baths and face masks and hair masks. You know, it's not that at all. It can be, but that's a really small part of it. It's really figuring out who you are without alcohol, without liquid courage. You know, a lot of people, when they get sober or sober curious, and they figure out why they self-medicated with alcohol, they find out that there's usually some underlying mental health stuff going on. So it's, you know, it's addressing your shit. You know, dating yourself is really just addressing your shit. So you show up in the world more authentically, you show up on dates more authentically and confidently. And like you said, you do the things that make you feel good, and then you're going to meet people just organically, whether it's in a class, in the gym, you know, in a support group, whatever. It's just really taking care of yourself, nurturing yourself. Like, it's so much more than a bubble bath.
Yeah. It's like, do the comfortable things, but also deliberately do the uncomfortable things.
Yeah. Yeah. Put yourself out there. And I think that's why liquid courage is so appealing, because it's comfortable. And I'm all for feeling comfortable, you know, that comfort zones have their time and place. But if you realize that you are relying on liquid courage or a particular behavior, it might be time to, you know, maybe just examine why.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember dating a guy ages ago, and he said two things to me. One, when we were chatting early on, he was like, what are your values? And I was like, I've never been asked that question, and I don't think I've ever had to verbalize that, which I really liked. And then the other thing that he said was, and it was just like this offhand comment where he was like, look, I just have this thing where like, if something scares me, I guess that means I have to do it. And I was like, oh, I love that thinking. And I totally stole that. And I think that thing of like, look, if it scares you, like that's probably a sign you should do it, do that thing. Do the thing that's challenging and hard, and be conscious of like, if you do desire to drink or avoid something or numb out or, you know, whatever it might be, that's your typical bad. And it's like, what's the opposite of that? Test that out. And it's an experiment. I think, you know, sometimes the barrier for some people, and I'd love to know your opinion on this, I feel like sometimes the barrier for people is that instead of thinking, I'm just going to like maybe have one night a week where I'm out social with friends that I don't drink, and then all my other socializing, it'll just stay as is. I think a lot of people go from like drinking all the time whenever they go out and do anything to being like, I can't have a single drink ever. I can't even look at alcohol. I can't smell it. And it's like, well, no, there's like you said with the weightlifting, it's like, no, there's small steps. There's little things you can do that are still massive accomplishments. And I think that barrier of like it needing to be a huge change and it impacting their whole life, it's like, hang on. There's ways we can do this that's enjoyable.
And I mean, it's, You're 100% right. People do this. They're like, you know, it's January. I'm going to work out every day. I'm going to give up alcohol for a month. I'm going to quit smoking cigarettes. I'm going to cook every meal. It's like, okay, chill out. You're not going to do all that. Let's be real. Like, nobody does all that. Especially someone who doesn't do any of that regularly. So reel it in. It is substance use. You know, I don't want to say abuse, just substance use. That means, you know, drinking, smoking pot, smoking cigarettes, whatever, is so personal, you know, like, and there's it just that that's why I say I'm not anti-alcohol. Figure out what feels right for you. Maybe you do a whole dry month. Maybe you only drink on Mondays. Maybe you only drink when you're out with friends. Maybe you don't drink at all. You know, it's just we as a society are learning that so much exists on a spectrum. Yes, gender, yes, sexuality, but also addiction, also substance use, alcohol use and abuse can exist on a spectrum as well. So really figuring out what works best for you instead of comparing your relationship with alcohol to somebody else, you know, like comparing your body to someone else's on Instagram is not going to help you at all. So it's the same thing with your relationship with substances. Like if you look at, you know, I used to do this all the time when I was a party girl, binge drinking bartender. Oh, I don't have a drinking problem. I don't look like her when I drink. I don't drink that much. I don't do this when I drink. I don't act like that. You know, I spent so much time judging other people's behaviors instead of seeing how my own were problematic. So, I know this is probably like the fourth time I've said this now, but it's like, it really is taking time to figure out, why are you smoking weed? Why are you drinking? Why do you hate being alone? And why are you constantly dating? You know, there's all sorts of compulsive behaviors that we have, and just really get present, get mindful to what's in your life that you're reaching for escapism through this.
Yeah. And I mean, it's going to be a long process, right? Like, I don't think, you know, don't look at your amazing accomplishments or where I'm at with my drinking and assume that was just an overnight decision. Maybe the decision was, hey, I don't want to do as much of this anymore. But the process of getting to this point is years and years and years and years. And like, you know, I remember one of the first things I did was drinking out with friends. I'd still drink in a red cup because I didn't really want anyone to know that I chose to drink, because alcohol is like the only substance that you have to explain why you're not doing it. You know, it's like everything else, people are like, okay, it's drugs, alcohol, or drugs, smoking, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like you can, there's, it's acceptable to say, you know, to say no. I think there's education around it. But alcohol, it's like you have to defend yourself if you're not drinking in some circles. And, you know, maybe that's a red flag if you're in the presence of people where you're like, I have to hide the fact that I'm not drinking. It's like, okay, maybe there's a little question mark there for you to investigate. But that was a big thing for me. I had to, like, I really was like kind of self-conscious about it. And I felt confident to socialize and hang out with people, but I didn't want to be challenged on it. And I didn't want to feel like I was not in on having a good time. Or I also, and you mentioned this in the book, it also makes other people kind of weirdly uncomfortable and put pressure on you because they want you to do what they're doing. And there's this funny interaction that happens where people are like, why aren't you drinking? Do you think it's bad? Do you think I'm bad? I don't drink that. You know, it's like, it becomes, I've never had a confrontation that's been aggressive like that, but it's subtle. And I feel like people get on the defense. And so that's where a lot of the peer pressure is coming from. I don't think that some of the peer pressure to drink is actually I want you and need you to drink alcohol. I actually think it's I'm projecting my fears right now, mm-hmm. that if you don't drink, it's because you're saying drinking is bad and I don't want to feel like drinking is bad. So I'm going to get you to join in.
100%. I mean, it's, you're right. I do talk about this in the book where I say, you know, so it's through the lens of dating, but people will often see your sobriety or sober curiosity as a mirror. You know, they will treat it as their own, as a reflection of their own substance use and abuse. So, and you're 100% right. These can absolutely be red flags. And I'm, you know, 8 years in recovery and I'm still learning so much about myself and my relationship with substances. But I can say that something that has been steady through all of it, the only people who question my sobriety or my recovery or try to push it are people who have their own issues with substances. People who have a healthy relationship with alcohol, people who most people just don't care. Like realistically, the people in your life who really care about you, well, they will want to support you. They will want to know how they can support you in drinking less. They will invite you to alcohol-free events. You know, they will ask how they can be supportive. Or they'll be indifferent. Like, cool, good for you. You know, but if anyone is like questioning you, why are you not drinking? Oh, we have that bachelor party next month. What are you going to do if you're sober at the bachelor party? Like there's always going to be some reason to keep drinking. Let's be real. So, you know, that's why I keep saying like, you really have to figure out your why. Why am I doing a dry month? Why am I giving up alcohol for a year? Why am I not drinking tonight? And everyone's why will be completely different, but that's why you can't compare because everyone's why is different.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think my why is I really like thinking about like it's almost like negative visualization of like why I don't want to drink. So I believe I have many reasons of why I'm sober, but I can kind of get there faster when I think about like, what are the consequences of drinking? Like, what is it actually looking like over the next couple of hours, 24 hours, 72 hours? If I do this weekend, then mm-hmm. what happens next weekend? What's the long term? Like, what's the trajectory that I set myself on for the long term? And I kind of do that, you know, it's something that when you start doing making these changes with alcohol, with training, with food, you realize that this decision-making happens across the board with everything that you do during the day. And so you do have to kind of think of like, okay, if I do this now, what does that mean for down the road? What does that actually look like there? Do I want to go down that path or should I just suck it up and like not do that today? And that means I've got, you know, one additional day that I'm like, you know what? I made the decision that's right and aligned with what I want and my why. Okay. I want to get to sex. I want to get to sex. And I wanted to talk about, we've got to get to sex. Where in the book, you talk about relationships and dating. I wanted to discuss for people that, cause you know, I kind of exist in a non-monogamous world. So it means there's a little bit of dating. There's a little bit of people that are looking for a partner. And then there's a little bit of people that are in relationships. For people that are like, it's an interesting kind of world to exist in for people that are single on purpose and just dating for, you know, more casual relationships, just hookups. They have friends with benefits. Maybe it's like you literally potentially going out to like hook up with someone. So that's a particular scenario that I think I struggle with because it's really hard to get away from the setting of, hey, let's go out for a drink. Cause it leaves the possibility for play afterwards. I can go to a bar and I'll order like 5 sparkling waters. Like I'm totally okay with doing that. And I've sat there while someone's had, you know, like 6 or 7 wines and I can sit on sparkling water all night and keep talking and I'm good. And I don't feel tired. Like I'm happy with that. But I think that could be a really hard scenario to get into. So like, you know, what do we do? Do we have to have a coffee date and then go into a play date immediately at a different scenario? Like, do you tell people to do some other activity? Do you tell people to go somewhere where you can get mocktails? Like, what are the things that you encourage people to do? Or do you tell people to do the thing where it's like, only date someone who doesn't drink, or be ready to drink water and build that confidence?
I love this question. I mean, there is a chapter. There's two chapters I'll reference. One is like basically how to set up your dating profile, you know, how to date when you're sober or sober curious. And then there's a chapter on how to date or be in a relationship with someone who drinks, because these are realistic things that are going to come up. I will say one huge, huge, huge thing is if you are going to be in a relationship, whether it's dating, a friendship, sexual relationship, whatever, with someone who drinks alcohol, you need to make sure that you feel safe and comfortable around someone else's drinking. And I don't mean, do not judge someone else's drinking at all. No one wants to feel like someone's counting their drinks. Nobody wants to feel like they're being watched. If you feel like that's something that you might do, or if you catch yourself doing that, that's probably not a healthy headspace to be in for you. and in, you know, earlier I said, don't compare your relationship with alcohol to someone else's. That also applies here. It's not up to you to decide if someone else has a drinking problem. It is up to you if you feel uncomfortable around someone else's drinking. And it, I think that's very, that's a, that is like a key part to dating someone who drinks. If, you know, feeling uncomfortable can look anything like feeling turned off when they smell like booze. Maybe you don't want to kiss them. You know, maybe you set a boundary, like you like dating this person, but you can't kiss them after they've had a drink because it's triggering for you. Or you're putting, you find yourself feeling like maybe I could have just one when you kiss someone who tastes like alcohol. So it's going to look so different on everyone. So I was sober dating for 3 years before I met my now husband, and I dated sober people. I dated people who didn't really drink. I learned that I did not like kissing someone who tasted like alcohol. But I didn't mind, like, I didn't mind if they had a glass of wine with dinner and then we kissed, because there's a lot of flavors going on there. But like, if, you know, if you go out with your boys, and then you come home like that, nothing's going to happen, you know? So I think it's really figuring out what makes you feel comfortable and safe in those situations.
Which is like just better for sex as well. Like, ultimately, I think people sidestep the need for comfort and trust and safety with people through alcohol. And it's like, is that really a great environment that's conducive to good sex? Because I'm going to push back really hard and be like, I doubt it. Because, like, okay, maybe I should stick to personal experience. But like, sex is hard when, like, there are so many things that I need and stuff that I need to request. And if I'm not with someone that I feel like I can ask for things from, or I feel comfortable around to do stuff that I might deem as like weird, or I'm worried about being judged on, or whatever it might be, it's like, maybe that's not someone I should even be hanging out with.
Like, yeah.
But if you introduce alcohol, maybe you're so much more willing to do that. And like, you know, the experience, it's like, are you trading off a good experience purely to be comfortable?
Oh, that's a really good way to put it. And I feel like a lot of times that could be people pleasing. You know, just trying please someone else at the expense of your own peace and at the expense of your own sanity. And, you know, we all people please for different reasons. You know, when I find myself doing it, it's because I feel insecure about a situation, or I want to impress somebody, or, you know, we all have these tendencies. But, you know, a lot of my drinking was a form of people pleasing, you know, and that also translated into the bedroom, where I drank excessively to be more adventurous in the bedroom. And it was, my sex life was largely performative. Like, I had fun, but it was largely performative in that I was doing certain positions, like just to impress people. Not that I liked it. It was like, oh, cool, I could do this. Not, you know, and it was way more for their experience than my own. So it's like, I think, people pleasing plays a really big role in that. And also, you know, the whole consent thing is kind of important. So if you are intoxicated, you cannot consent to something, to sex, to, you cannot consent to anything if you're intoxicated, but we're talking about sex here. And as you know, a lot of sex parties, play parties, adult film sets, a lot of them are zero substance. Like, or they have like a 1 to 2 drink maximum. Like, you cannot work in the adult film industry while being intoxicated. Like, you have to sign waivers. I interviewed about a dozen sober porn stars while researching this book, and I was shocked to learn how safe and clean and sober a lot of these sets are. And again, I'm talking about like mainstream porn. I'm not talking about, you know, indie stuff. I'm talking about like the big budget sets here. But you know, earlier you mentioned sex parties. Most sex parties discourage intoxication and they encourage enthusiastic consent. And you cannot have both at the same time.
The people pleasing just spoke to my soul. That was my 20s and all of my relationships and sex. Oh my God. And the consent thing is massive. There's a online community called Naughty Gym. They're based out of Alabama and they do fitness for like non-monogamous LGBTQ plus. Like, just like they're awesome. And so they've got this big hotel resort takeover and people are sharing tips for like, okay, how do you address being in a party for the first time if you're new to this, all those things. And I'm like, don't drink, like do not drink. I know you're going to want to fight it. Don't do it. Go into that freaking sober because it's really hard for you to communicate what you need, to remove yourself from a situation, to give consent. And two, it's really hard for other people to engage with you. I've been around drunk people and it is drunk people and people doing drugs at sex parties. It is the worst. It kills the vibe. It's so hard to deal with. It's just like dealing with children all of a sudden in like an adult, yes. Very adult environment. It's like, no, do not do that. And like, totally, you know, I think if people are happy to do one, maybe two drinks, cool. I like having a zero rule. It just means that it's no thinking is involved. I don't even have to make a decision about when to stop. I just don't start. And there's so many drinks now that are non-alcoholic. It's like, look, you can do it. But I'm like, please don't bring alcohol into the mix or other drugs. It just makes it really tricky and challenging. And it's so easy to go past what what you can really tolerate and what your limit is. That's huge. Okay. So then you actually kind of brought up an interesting point around like the alcohol can be used to like make people more adventurous in the bedroom. And I 100% agree with you around the performance thing. Sometimes it is totally people pleasing. So then whether you're single or in a relationship, and I think in relationships, people probably fall into the trap of like, I want to try something new. Talking about sex is tricky. Our next date night, I'll have a few and we can experiment on the fly in the bedroom. I'm not going to say anything. It's like, okay, how do we bring interesting sex into, you know, how do you explore sex sober, whether you're dating or in a relationship? Maybe we'll go to the relationship side because we've kind of been talking about singles for now. So like in a relationship with people that maybe don't have the premise of super open ongoing conversation around sex, and it is maybe like a little bit murky around like alcohol and sex being attached. Like I've read many Reddit stories around people who are like, oh, well, I had a few, and you know, on those nights I do like to get a bit frisky with my husband, and like then other husbands saying like, I know my wife is always going to put out when she's had a drink. And it's like, it's just such a
like, yeah, that's, I don't like that.
So easily, and I'm like, oh. So like, how do we have interesting, fun, explorative, adventurous sex in relationships if the starting point is kind of a, we don't know how to talk about sex and we use alcohol to work around those uncomfortable
things? I mean, this is the question, you know, this is the big question here. And it's I lost my train of thought. So for me, your question is making me think of like all the research I did for the book and how that research helped me redefine sexual liberation. So with sexual liberation, I thought it meant doing more in bed, you know, using more toys, trying more, you know, bringing more people in, trying more positions. And it absolutely can be, don't get me wrong. But I also had to learn how important it is to learn to take away some of the bells and whistles. Like maybe you are already adventurous in bed. I was very adventurous in bed. I needed to learn how to chill the fuck out in bed and figure out what I wanted instead of trying to please everybody else. So, and I also, you know, as you know, in the book, I interviewed a handful of asexual people who talked about how once they got sober, they realized, you know, and then they started dating and having sex, they realized they actually don't like it. Like the reason they drank alcohol, that was one of the many reasons they drank alcohol, was to try to make themselves quote unquote be normal. So the reason that I share all of this is, you know, having sex without alcohol for the first time, dating without alcohol for the first time, it really can be like a reset, you know, like a hard restart. Throw out all the rules, like forget all of those Cosmo headlines that you read growing up that made you think that, you know, 10 ways to please your man. Like, no, fuck that. Like, what do you want? So, you know, that's my very long answer to your question is, in the same way that, you know, alcohol use, substance use is very personal. Recovery is very personal. It looks different for everyone. I would say the same thing about what sexual liberation means for you. It really is, you know, I never thought I'd be my happiest being monogamous, married, and having missionary sex. It's my fucking favorite thing in the world. And I spent so long trying to do everything else. That's what works for me. You know, today, we're also very realistic of knowing that other people are hot and that might change, you know, our impulses might change. But so I would just encourage anyone who's listening to really look at sober dating and sober sex through the lens of a clean slate. What do you want out of this situation? What do you want out of this date? What do you want out of this sexual experience? Figure that out for yourself. That's why people don't know how to communicate, is because they don't even know what they want for themselves. So this goes back to us talking about dating yourself. The more time you spend alone figuring out who you are without alcohol, then you'll be able to answer that question. You'll know what you bring to the table. Then it's going to be, these confidence exercises that we were talking about, you're going to feel more confident when it does come time to talk about sex where you normally would have felt uncomfortable and needed a drink. You've already done all this work because you figured out who you are and what you want, and you figured out what you don't want. That's probably like a 10-minute answer, and I'm really sorry.
Never apologize for long answers. Actually, you reminded me of a really good exercise that you had in the book around emotional expression. And I think that it's kind of like the beginning of the work that you would need to do to be able to verbalize what you want in the bedroom, because it was essentially like bring a broader vocabulary to the way that you feel, rather than like, oh, I just feel like shit today, or saying I'm fine, the worst answer you can possibly say if you actually don't feel fine. It's like, figure out how you feel about something and get good at saying it. So an example, my partner is really good at this. It's one of the things that I love about him. He loves to talk and share, and we have these awesome conversations. And he sent me a clip of a podcast or something recently. And it's so easy to double tap it and be like, love that. I'm listening to it now. Super short answer. And I'm like, hang on. No, I want to actually figure out like, what did you get out of that? What did you like about that?
Yeah.
And so in my response, I was like, I really like that because of what they said about this and the part where she mentioned that thing. What was it that you noticed about it? Or how do you feel about that? What are your thoughts on that? And it's just like, there are little sliding door moments that come up a lot in a relationship or in dating, where it's like you can say kind of like, oh, cool, that's nice, interesting, or like, wow, you know, like, wow, or that's crazy, right? Like those like fucking little catchphrases that we all have and we all say. It's like you can say more and you can actually put into words what you thought about that, or sit on it and kind of process it. And it's like, what do you want? And I think one of the things that you had was actually responding about a movie. It was one of the examples. It's like, oh, I like that movie. It was a good movie. And it's like, no, what did you like about it? Why? And how did it make you feel? And what would you, you know, like what's your, be a freaking movie critic. And it's like,
yeah,
some of that stuff is the beginning of expressing yourself. It's learning how to be emotionally expressive, because we're kind of bad at it.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's there's a lot there. And God, I want more people to feel comfortable advocating for themselves, you know, and like, that's why I put those prompts in the book, is really because, you know, again, how do we work on communication? People don't know how to communicate. Like we were not taught how to communicate. We were not taught how to advocate for ourselves. So of course, that if we don't know how to talk, then what are we going to, you know, like we were not given these tools. We had, you know, if you want to learn it, there are conversations like this out there, but you do have to seek them out. So it's, you know, and I think that really comes to the point of like the importance of dating yourself, even if you're in a relationship when you get sober or sober curious, you know, like I would argue you probably need more time dating yourself if you're in a relationship and you're going through something like this. And I think aftercare could actually be a really good way to get these sexual conversations started, you know, if let's say you've been married for 5 years, you're, you know, a couple months sober and you're having a hard time being intimate with your partner. Talk about that in the aftercare. Like, you know, you know, figure out how you want to word it, but it, you know, you could let them know like, hey, you know, sex without alcohol is new. I don't really know how I feel about it. It's a little confusing. Or it could even, you could have a more positive spin on it. Like, hey, I really liked when you did this. This was really fun. Let's do that next time. That can really create space for the other person to say, oh, well, now that you bring it up, I actually liked when you did this, you know? So it is also putting yourself out there. So if you do know how to communicate, you have to actually start the conversation. And that's, you know, that could be kind of scary.
Yeah, I really like what you said around like, just share how you actually feel. Like, I think sometimes we do overthink the delivery and like, what are we going to say? How are we going to say it? And it's like, man, just start with how you feel. Like, I felt a bit nervous. Like, you know, you could say that. It's super simple and it's like honest and it's a little bit vulnerable. And I think you get your partner being like, oh, really? Like, why? That's interesting. You know, it's like some simple little, I felt this. And it's like, that could start a whole conversation. Let it go where it wants to go. And then what you said was awesome. I love that, like, give the positive feedback, like give the thing that you like. Cause I think, you know, we often are focused on like, oh, I really want to change that. I wish this was different. Or like, I want to try this thing. And it's like, that's sometimes a hard point to start from, especially, you know, being the partner on the receiving end. It's like, if you're not in the habit of talking about sex at all, maybe starting with the good stuff is like a really nice starting point. And then I think if you do want feedback, man, be ready to ask for it first. Like that was, I felt really nervous. What did you like what I did? Was that something you would want again? Or maybe skip next time? You know, it's like, was that okay for you? Like, I asked Greg that literally the other day. I was like, was that good? Did you like that? It's like, you can never ask too many times.
Well, and then when you start these kinds of dialogue, it can show up in other places too. Like, yes, we're talking about sex here, but it could also be like, I really appreciate you picking up the dry cleaning last week. That helped me out a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, just these little things like that, to just remind your partner that you care about them, that they're appreciated. And that's it. That's all I got.
That was all you needed. It was a mic drop moment.
Bye.
let your partner know you love them. Everyone's like, what?
That's it.
This is groundbreaking information.
You heard it here first.
We're not good at it. Yeah. Okay. So sober sex, but what is the thing that if you could talk to like your like 20-year-old self, what would you tell them to do more of and what would you tell them to do less of?
God, you're going to hate this answer because I literally wrote this book for her. I would tell her every single thing of this book. You know, I don't even know that I would tell her anything. I think I would just ask her questions to get her to really ponder on her life choices. Like, you know, when I was 20, I was, you know, in and out of college, career bartender, binge drinking on a regular basis. Driving drunk, having unprotected sex. I mean, I was reckless. I was truly so reckless. So I would just ask myself why, you know, why are you,
it's a trick.
Why are you doing this? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, well, I mean, we wouldn't have got dry humping if you hadn't gone through that. We needed someone to get to the other side.
Hey, I made it and it's a miracle that I made it. I can't believe it, but, I talk about how I add up the amount of money I spent on alcohol. And it was, you know, just a very rough estimate, but it was definitely six figures. So the way I justify that to myself is like, well, that was my research grant for dry humping.
There you go. Perfect. Okay. Tell me about with your husband, what do you guys do for intimacy and dating now?
Oh, you know, so my husband is he's a sommelier and he loves food. Like,
oh, that's right. I forgot.
He loves good food. He's a fantastic cook. So we just, you know, we live in New York City. So one of our favorite things to do is just go check out new restaurants. We love food, and he's, I cook, but he is definitely the cook of the relationship. He's always making something. If I'm craving it, he makes it for me. So all of our dates usually have to do with food. And something that I think is really, that I think is important for us is, we have what we call intimacy time, you know, like, hey, do you want to have some intimacy time later? So that's really open-ended. It doesn't mean like, you know, it's, I guess, under the umbrella of scheduling sex, but it's way more casual with less pressure.
I like that.
It's like, you know, it's like, we're just going to be intimate. Like that might mean we just like talk about our day. We might take a nap. We might, like, who knows what's going to happen, but we know that we're going to have this chunk of time together. And that has taken so much pressure off of, you know, like us thinking we're supposed to do a certain thing a certain amount of times a week. And it's just, it's a lot. So really holding space to just be present with each other and listen and talk. That's been huge for us.
Yeah, I really like that. That's cool. I like the reframing of the scheduling sex thing because I've always been on board with that, but I'm much more OCD than Greg. And I think that that wouldn't mesh very well for us. So the casual intimacy time, just time connecting is cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Do you guys, if you eat out a lot for dinner, I'm the same. I love eating out for dinner. Do you prescribe to the fuck first approach from Dan Savage? If you don't eat out for big dinners.
I really appreciate this reference. God, it's so funny. I am such a morning person and Nick is a night owl. So like afternoon is our ideal time. So that's,
yes,
just usually
afternoon sex.
Yeah, like he will, if you see Nick initiate morning sex, then like I know something's up. And if you see me initiate like sex after like 9 o'clock, something's up. So yeah, afternoon's usually our sweet spot anyway.
Yeah, I'm totally an afternoon person for sure. Mornings, not really my, I'll do it, but you know, afternoons are good. Amazing. Thank you so much. This was an awesome conversation. We covered a lot of ground. Your book is in, you know, such a really, it's a resource really. And I hope more people pick it up and read it and get their head around the idea that sex and dating and humping is great dry. Where can they find your book?
Yeah, you can get the book. It's online everywhere. It's on Amazon. It's on, you know, try to support local bookstores as much as you can. And there's an audiobook. I recorded the audio, and there's also an ebook. So lots of ways. And I have a weekly advice column called Beyond Liquid Courage, where I answer questions about sober sex and dating, and I just write, you know, random essays and stuff like that. But all of really it's, I'm just obsessed with liquid courage and I can't stop talking about it.
That's cool. I think the email is such a good idea. I think it's one of those things where like, if you want to continue to do it, keep having the information coming into your brain constantly, you know, follow the right people, unfollow the wrong people, get the emails,
yes,
subscribe, get the books, like do everything you can to kind of saturate yourself with it. I think it's such a nice way to find some consistency and like, you know, just to have a little bit of a lifestyle or a information lifestyle overhaul.
Yes.
Thank you
like
so much.
A lot.
And I will I'll add all of your links onto the show notes, and then this will be posted either end of 2023 or it might even be early 2024. Please enjoy the end of the year, and thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you soon.